Thank you. Welcome, good morning, good day, and good evening. Welcome to today's call on the Who is Review Team Internationalized Data Registration Data Working Group. On the line, we have Dennis, Nishit, Jim, Naoki, Jody on the line, and myself, Steve Shang. Is there anyone that I miss? I saw Takao in the Adobe Connect. Takao, are you on the line too? He's probably in the process of joining. Okay, so we have quorum. So Jim, over to you.
So thank you, Steve, and thanks to everyone for jumping in and joining us yet again today. We've been on a bit of an unexpected hiatus rather than a planned one, and I take some responsibility for that. I just haven't pressed Steve, you know, to keep us organized enough to keep these things moving. But as we get into the fall here, we're now at a vacation season. I'm hoping that we'll be able to pick up and move on. I believe, up to this point, that we have one particular, technical issue that we've been talking about the last couple of calls that we did have. I'm the one who has been pressing for that discussion. And in separating my role here as chair out from my personal position, I know that what I had done was ask of the group to revisit a decision that we had made earlier, because I, you know, the more that I had gotten into this and sort of looked at all of this issue, I've been much more sensitive to the fact that I'm really not comfortable with the direction we're headed. So I've tried to reopen that discussion and have more of it. And I guess we're going to continue that today. Now, I have actually talked to Steve separately, and we had a bit of a discussion. I just wanted to call that out. And he helped to clarify some of my thoughts a bit. And in addition, Steve has published some words for us. It was an action left over from the last meeting that we did have, where he specifically addressed the question of roles and responsibilities in this process. I have some comments on this text. Steve had shared it with me ahead of time, but I actually did not recommend any changes to him here. I didn't think that there was anything substantive to change, but there are some suggestions I would make as we get into a discussion. So, okay. So bringing this back around. Speaking now as chair, I believe that we're very close with this document, and I think overall, you know, we may be in a place where we can actually come to closure here before the upcoming ICANN meeting. I had suggested in email a path forward for talking about a couple of things, and I guess I'd like to try and take the conversations that we've been having and shape it in that way. So let me pause here first and ask if anyone has, agenda bashing or, any other, high issues or top issues that you want to bring up here before we jump into a specific discussion. Okay. So not hearing anything. I'm going to move forward with the way that I had proposed on the mailing list. So I guess one last chance again. Anyone want to suggest something different? Okay. So my concern in our work really does come from the fact that, I'm not comfortable with this freeform text for postal information. But I think I have now a different suggestion for how to frame this discussion. And I'd like to separate it into two things. One, a much more generic technical issue. Now, after having a number of different discussions with different people about the way technology exists today and the situation that we're in, I think what we have identified is a fairly substantial, significant issue that's going to need some attention going forward. What I want to suggest and remind us about is, in line with what the Directory Services Expert Working Group did, I think that it would be very good for us to lay out what we believe is an ideal kind of structure or framework for internationalized registration data. In other words, what we think is the ideal scenario. And then we should go down the path of talking about the issues that are present in trying to achieve that goal. And one of the major issues, in the same way that we have these motivating principles driving our recommendations, the user capability principle most notably, I think we have this underlying technical issue to call out and to speak to. And that's what I'd like to propose as sort of a substantial topic of discussion that we put in our document as, you know, a path that needs to be cleared, if you will, a path for future study, is dealing with those technical issues that I very briefly described in my email message. So it was Dennis on the mailing list who seemed to suggest he agreed with me. Let me reach out, Dennis, and just ask you to comment, I mean, how completely you agreed with me, or if you have any questions or concerns, and just start with you, please.
Sure, Jim. Thank you. Yes, I agree with your recommendation on how we should be framed. I think earlier in our discussion, we talked about the WHO's accuracy problem specifications, and along the way, I think we lost track of it, and I'm glad you brought that back because that gives us direction. And I see where the validation that we need to think of as a constraint, if you will, not a requirement, but a constraint that we have to think and take into account.
Yes, good. Thank you. I like that word, constraint, as opposed to requirement. I think that fits very nicely into what we're doing here, because in many ways that's what the Directory Services Group had done too. They really were trying to get a picture of what's going on in the world and what's expected to go on, and use that to help motivate, you know, what it was that they were proposing. So that's good. Thank you. I do want to be careful to separate out the who is validation from this technical question. So the other, I think, important path forward from my point of view in what we do here is I think that the validation constraint is what motivates wanting to say something more than freeform text or postal information. I think that we can propose a recommendation that based on the requirements, based on the constraint that validation is something that is going to be required of registrars in particular, that it's appropriate to have structure applied to postal contact information. And then we can talk about the structure that we're suggesting, what we think is most relevant that lines up with all the parts that need to line up. So the postal regulations and the need to support the tagging by language and script of all the data elements. And those things, of course, will point us back to this technical discussion we will have already had. But it's, using that validation constraint to motivate the need for structure, I think, is valuable and important. I think it was Naoki, is that correct, who had also replied on the mailing list? I'm looking now for them. Yes, it was Naoki. So, Naoki, you had made some comments about being able to identify the script, and I replied to you, making two points. So let me ask if you want to add anything to this discussion and if you want to speak to the email exchange that you and I briefly had?
If I'd like to continue to discuss on the list.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Anyone else want to make any comment about my suggestion about splitting out the technical issues as a larger discussion deserving its own section, if you will, and then using just validation to motivate the need for more structured, something more structured than freeform text on postal information?
This is Jody. I think it's fine that we have that technical discussion within the document. I have my concerns as a registrar as to how much we can expect the registrars to perform on address validation, especially in regards to the RRA.
So I agree with you, Jody, and I'm sensitive to that too. I certainly don't want to make validation recommendations or suggestions per se. I mean, I actually not even per se. I know that I don't want to do that. I don't want to change what exists. And that's why I like the word that Dennis had proposed about constraints versus requirements. Simply being aware of the constraints of validation, I think is, without saying what that validation is or needs to be, is what motivates this issue of structure to the contact information. Because I think without it, just speaking from a pure technical point of view, this is just my opinion, I just think that without structure, you create ambiguous and open-ended situations. We may not know what all of that structure should be, but I think it's important for us to speak to that issue that structure is relevant. And when the time comes for a PT discussion or a policy discussion that turns into a you will do it this way kind of discussion, those issues will have to get resolved. And I think that's our contribution to this process, is to point out that some structure has to be imposed. We might make a suggestion on that structure, but ultimately the structure will have to be decided by the PDP process that follows this work. That's what I'm thinking. Does that respond to your comment, Jody, in a way that you're comfortable with?
I think so, Jim.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? So let me make a... As chair, let me make a clear assertion and just see if anyone wants to jump up and object here. We had the note that I had sent trying to separate this, structure this discussion and this text in a certain way. I believe, I really do want to put out there, are people comfortable with the idea that freeform text is not the right recommendation for postal information, that we should be recommending some kind of structure? Now, the structure that's been put out there so far is that the postal information should be in a form appropriate for the region in which it's located. I'm going to continue down that path with Steve to try and put some text together that does explain this. I think we now have a bit of text in different places and different email messages and some of the notes from our meetings that hopefully we can get this together and people will have yet another chance to review it. But are people comfortable with that idea that there should be structured text there? And I'm sorry, someone's trying to speak.
Nishit, can I comment?
Yes, please, Nishit, go ahead.
So with the structure, are you trying to say that the contact information should be text with a language or a script, or you are trying to say that with the structure, the contact information should be in the proper format as it should be in that region?
I'm not sure I got the first half. Is it just was the first half you were referring to just the language and script issue, or were you saying something else?
Yes. So what I was saying is that you have mentioned to have some kind of a structure, not just the free-form text for the contact information. So my question was that with the structure in the contact information, did you mean to just tag that information with language or script, or do you mean to have it in a proper format according to that UPU postal addressing mechanism or something like that, which should be valid in that region?
Okay, so thank you for that. I believe that both issues are important. Admittedly, my focus is on the first issue, which is that ensuring that all the elements of an address are properly tagged with language and script. I also think that, so that's really my driving focus, my motivation for wanting to do things in this way. But I have along the way come to an appreciation of the fact that the actual structure, if you will, of an address, we have accepted to date this notion of, you know, name, address line 1, address line 2, city, state, province, you know, postal code kind of stuff. But I have come to appreciate the realization that that's really a Western form of an address. And so I think it would be appropriate in our document to call that out. I don't know that I have a recommendation about that because I'm not liking the recommendation that I think is the only relevant one to make. And that is that reminding people that the structure of an address is really dependent on the country. The country gets to decide what an address looks like. The country gets to decide all by itself. In fact, the local post office or postal agency where the physical address is located gets to decide whether an address is structured sufficiently to be useful. That's just the state of the world, which is kind of interesting in all of this. But I'm not prepared to make any recommendation in that regard. I think that we just let the market sort of figure out what it's going to do about that. But commenting on the fact that that structure is kind of arbitrarily chosen, if you will, or exists for legacy reasons more than any kind of mandate, I think it's worth pointing out. That's just my view. Any response to that?
This is Jody. Okay. Jim.
So please, Jody, go ahead.
I guess what I'm hearing, to rephrase it to make sure that I understand what you're saying, is that, you know, that structure with address line 1, 2, 3, city, state, province, is Western, but we would still be keeping that, suggesting that we're still keeping that same structure for every address?
I would suggest in our document that we not propose any change to that, but we observe that that choice is a Western legacy choice, and we observe that the postal regulations allow other choices. And so we simply point out that in an internationalization context, when the community gets around to deciding what to mandate, they should really examine the fact that that particular choice for names and addresses may not be sufficient. That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay. We would just document that within our paper here.
Yes, correct.
And what you're also proposing is that we would be saying, well, I'll let you continue.
Well, no. And then the other side, what I really am proposing, what I do think that we should recommend, is that one of the key parts of internationalization is allowing for two things. The postal address information should be in a language or script appropriate for the region it's located. That's the specific structure that we would recommend. then as an additional follow-on work, we'll point out, we'll refer back to this technical section, because what we'll observe is that mixing scripts and languages in contact information is a common thing, the canonical example being the use of, you know, the Roman numerals 0 to 9. But there are, you know, other examples and other reasons why this happens. And we should observe as a technical issue that, you know, current EPP standards, you know, and workflows and encoding schemes don't deal with that today. And that's an issue. We may have to just accept that for now and only take what we can take, but we need to put as future work that, you know, ICANN needs to facilitate technical communities going off and dealing with this issue and solving it.
If I can add more, Jim.
Please.
This is, you know, another issue that, and I've spoken about this before, and I think we've discussed this, is that there is, I'm not sure where we're going as far as the requirements for the registrar, as far as will the registrar be required to validate that the script entered is what is required of that region or is local to that region. There's no ISO standard or list that says this script is associated with this region or can be used with this region.
So I agree with you. There's no requirement in any ICANN context or outside of that that you have to validate that the language or script belongs in that region. Or, let me say that differently. I think what you're saying is that the ability to perform that validation simply doesn't exist.
Right.
So, you know, we're suggesting that the language or script, or recommending that the language or script should be appropriate for the region. And then I think that we need to point out the fact that although that's probably the right thing to do, in fact, it's actually not possible to do that today. And we need to point that out. And that in order for that step to be possible, what needs to come into existence is the reference points of what languages and scripts are valid in a particular region, for some definition of region, probably country. This is probably, you know, at some level in the end here, to take all of this in, it really has to be written down so that we can look through it. But, I mean, are you comfortable with what we're saying at the moment?
I'm comfortable with listing the technical challenges around what we're expecting for the international as far as why this can't be done currently, I guess, is because EPP doesn't support it, because there's no accepted standard for regions and scripts. I'm not sure what the third one was. Well, the workflow changes that would be required by registrars to validate this is going to be quite heavy, actually.
Yes.
Contact validation for registrars is becoming a very big piece of our workflow. And that's why I'm a little concerned about how much we're adding to this.
So I agree. I'm aware of what you're talking about, and I want to be sensitive to that. Again, this falls into the category of constraint rather than requirement. You know, it's like we need to be sensitive to what's going on and what's happening, and, you know, I'm comfortable making recommendations that align with what's happening around us, but that just means it's important for us to put the recommendation in context so that if that context changes, then people have a natural reason for changing the recommendation or for not accepting it and not wanting to go in that direction. Obviously, any work product we produce is simply a moment in time. OK, Okay, so stepping back again, I do sense that there's some caution with respect to going down this path. So I'm comfortable with the idea that, you know, people certainly want to see this written down in black and white before they make a final decision. But I believe, I sense that people are comfortable with, I guess I'll just put my own name out there. I mean, I've been pressing kind of hard on this point of view and moving forward with it. People seem to be coming around to the idea that it doesn't sound bad, maybe sounds good, but everybody wants to see it written down before we make a final commitment. Would that be fair? Anyone object to that or want to comment on that?
This is Jody. I think that's fair to write it down, and we could start commenting on it from there.
This is Takao. I agree.
Thank you, Takao.
This is Nishita.
Good. Thank you, Nishit. And Dennis?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So that's good. So maybe that's enough on that discussion then for right now. And what I'd like to do here is jump into looking at the text that Steve wrote about roles and responsibilities. I haven't figured out exactly where we would use this text yet. I don't know if Steve, if you have a particular suggestion about that at the moment. I do believe that I like this text, and I think it helped to put into context the framework in which we were working. For me, it describes the overall system in a way that helps to motivate our first principles, user capability principle in particular. The only comment that I made to Steve separately about this text, and I'll make it here now, is that in talking about the responsibilities, he makes the comment about the consumers, you know, being in the best position for translation and transliteration. My concern is I think I want to reword that a little bit, to be a little bit softer in the sense that I don't want to get ahead of the Translation and Transliteration PDP Working Group, which is speaking specifically to the question of who should do translation and transliteration and why, and in fact, if there should be a single language and script in use or not. So I want to be careful not to try and get ahead of that group in any decision that it might make. Other than that, I like this description, and I want to find a place to put it in our document, and I haven't decided or figured out where that might be myself. So any suggestions that others have, any comments that anyone has on the text that Steve wrote?
Hi, Jim. This is Steve. What I wrote here, I went through the transcript of the discussions in particular about assigning, responsibilities. In our discussion, we mostly focus on the data producer and consumer. What I added here is also added intermediary, because this is an accepted term in this space, intermediaries as, receiving and publishing the information. So that's the first thing I added to the discussion. Just please, in terms of the responsibilities, what I hear from the last call is, the data producer should be able to submit data, not obligated to submit it in English, but in a language and script they are most familiar with. And they have the responsibility to submit the most accurate data. And then the intermediary the data consumer has the responsibility to transform. I mean, by transform, what I mean is, you know, translate or transliterate the data, you know, as he or she needs, suitable for his or her purposes, because they have the most incentive to do so. And in order to do that, the responsibility of the intermediary is to be able to accept the input, tag it in a way, and publish it so that it allows further processing by the data consumers. So those are the kind of what I gathered from the discussion last week, and then I attach the roles and responsibilities here. So just to provide some context to this text. Thanks.
So thank you for that, Steve. Any questions or comments from anyone? Suggestions on where we might use this text? Okay, well, I'm not yet sure where to use this, but as I dig into this document with Steve here to move forward, I want to find a place to put it. I think that it's helpful clarifying text. That's just my personal view. If no one objects, then we'll do our best to find a spot for it. And make sure it's there.
Hi, this is Nishit Kanatam.
Please, Nishit, go ahead.
Okay, so my suggestion would be that can we put it in a header of categorization of users of who is registration data, and there we can mention it in three categories, data producer, data consumer, and the intermediary where registrars and registries are there. So, and then roles and responsibilities.
Okay, thank you. That works for me. I don't have. I'm happy with that. I mean, Steve, any comments from you about that?
Yeah, that seems to be fine. Yeah, seems to be a good place.
So we can start with that, and we'll develop everything else around it. So thank you for that, Nishi.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the text is kind of rough. I mean, it needs to go through several rounds of serious editing. But that's kind of the, if people can comment either here on whether the general idea is what you have agreed on in the past, that would be good. And then when we have the actual text, the edited text in front of people, that's also an opportunity to comment. Thanks.
Okay, so with all of that, that's it from me as far as a proposed agenda at the moment in discussion for today. Let me open the floor for any other business. I have an item for any other business, but let me ask if anyone else does first. So, Steve, a quick procedural question for you.
Yes.
We did get some comments when we did our initial output and asked for public comments.
Yes.
We have to reply to those in some formal way, right? Don't we have to include? We have to make sure that the final publication has to include all of that as an appendix or something, doesn't it?
Yes, we need to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
So I can. I mean, obviously, these administrative responsibilities will fall on me to do. What we can do is, we can list all those comments as separate appendices, or we can summarize them and put them as one appendix. What do people prefer?
My recollection is there weren't that many comments. And so, you know, I mean, I'm inclined towards a single appendix that, you know, we might put a summary and then, or a bulleted list of the issues that were highlighted and then our response to those issues. And then we should probably just include in total the comments that we did get. My recollection is it wasn't that great, so it would be okay to do that without expanding our document too much.
There are a total of 4 comments from the business constituency, from the VeriSign, from intellectual property constituency, and from ALAC. So those are a total of 4 comments.
Yeah, so we could probably just include them in whole, but I would probably create an appendix that, you know, does kind of an executive summary kind of thing in front of it and then just tack on all the comments.
Okay.
I think that's what I would do.
Okay, sounds good.
Any other, you know, any other suggestions from anyone else? Okay. So I guess that's it for me. We'll meet again next week. I will make a point, Steve and I'll make a point of getting together so that we can, you know, begin to get everything into this document that we want. And hopefully we're in a state of simply reviewing our final pages, as it were, leading up to the LA meeting. I'm hopeful and really want to focus on a target of being done by the time we get to Los Angeles. Be nice if we could actually get it published and out the door before Los Angeles, but I know that we're running up against, we got about three or four more meetings to do that, because otherwise the publication cycle will be too close to the meeting and it'll have to come after. Not that that's a terrible thing, but, you know, we'll see if we can move things along before then. So I think that's it. I suggest that we're adjourned. So Steve, let me turn it over to you to end the meeting.
Thank you. And we will meet again next week. I've sent a request for that. And then we have an action item to find a place to edit the current text on the screen, find a place in the document. I'll work with Jim to produce some text on the technical consideration section. And then we'll produce a document for the group to review, aiming to have it done before in Los Angeles meeting. With that, good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Operator, could you stop the recording?